I'm going down the road feeling bad. Oh, I'm going down the road feeling bad. Oh, I'm going down the road feeling bad. And ain't gonna be treated this way.
That was a little bit of Lonesome Road Blues, performed by the Blue Ridge Duo, Gene Austin and George Renault, recorded on September 22, 1924. I found this recording in the Internet Archive's open source audio collection at www.archive.org. Like most of the audio recordings at the Internet Archive, this one is under a Creative Commons license. The license says, "The person or persons who have associated work with this document, the dedicator or certifier, hereby either certifies that to the best of his knowledge the work of authorship identified is in the public domain of the country from which the work is published, or hereby dedicates whatever copyright the dedicator holds in the work of authorship identified below to the public domain." That's a mouthful. In simple terms, it means that somebody asserted that this recording is in the public domain. The person who made that assertion seems to have been the curator of the Edison Archive, which is part of the National Park Service website. According to the webpage at the Edison Archive, this site includes approximately 48,000 disc and cylinder records produced by Edison in West Orange, New Jersey, between 1888 and 1929. Many of these, including unreleased and experimental recordings, have been at the laboratory since Edison's lifetime. Some of the earliest examples of recorded sound in existence are preserved within this unique collection. You can find all kinds of things on the Internet Archive. Here's something that just showed up today. Pete Teo, a Malaysian independent artist I've never heard of. The description says, this collection contains three songs from Pete's debut solo album, Rustic Living for Urbanites, which was a commercial and critical success in Malaysia when it was released in 2003. It features the popular hit, Jesselton Tonight. Pete Teo's tunes were released to the Open Source Archive under a different flavor of Creative Commons license. This one reads, "You are free to copy, distribute, display, and perform the work under the following conditions. Attribution: you must give the original author credit. Non-commercial: you may not use this work for commercial purposes. No derivative works: you may not alter, transform, or build upon this work." Yeah, we have the night. Doing sweet thing in fall time. You said it didn't work, but I'm also glad to be alive. To be alive. The Internet Archive, where I found these recordings, was started in 1996 by a guy named Brewster Kahle, who before that worked in artificial intelligence and then was a pioneer of early internet publishing and search. Brewster's vision is that we can capture and store and make available to everyone, essentially all human knowledge.
Universal access to all the published works of humankind, all books, all music, all video, all software, all web pages, is within our grasp, technically. The Library of Congress is 26 million books. 26 million books times $10, $260 million. That's their budget for 6 months. We could have the whole damn thing online, right? This, and it costs, if you put it in ASCII, it costs about $60,000 to store the Library of Congress in a bookshelf at about this size of Linux boxes. So we're dealing with something that's doable, and music is bigger, films are bigger, but it's all around still within our grasp to be able to pull this stuff off.
There are plenty of gems to be found on the Internet Archive. There are also a whole lot of things that sound kind of like this.
Oh, I feel that the human race may well be in a state of neotony. That means simply that you take a tadpole that remains a tadpole and doesn't develop into a frog is in a state of neotony.
The title of that work is Swab Miotomy, M-I-O-T-O-M-Y. It's described as an electroacoustic soundscape with cut up and processed spoken word by W.Out. I think W.Out, by the way, was confused about the word myotomy, which, as far as I can tell, is some kind of surgical procedure, and probably meant neoteny, which means the retention of juvenile characteristics in the adults of a species. Here are some other items that were uploaded recently. Moonscan. The Moonscan collection is a digital translation of lunar landscape images into music. By Jeff Bechtel. The Moonscan recordings were made in the years 1999 to 2000, when I was exploring the relationship between fractals and natural systems in music. Moonscan original content from NASA Lunar Landscape Images. Mind and Mental Factors, Venerable Tubten Donrub, recorded December 2004, Hospice of Mother Tara Buddhist Center, Bunbury, Western Australia. The teachings of Lo Rig explain what the mind is and how it works. Scurvy, The Couch Rock Sessions. Complete recordings of a college rock band from North Alabama between the years of 1995 and 1998. Anthology, Side 2A. Early Experiments in Audio by Claudius Maximus. Written pre-1997 and recorded to tape in 1998 using hardware that didn't match the original composition. This hardware difference mangled the intended sound palette beyond recognition. In particular, polyphony was lost. These compositions were rough sketches at best. Now they are smudged. For true Claudius Maximus addicts only. Adlai Stevenson demands answer from Soviet delegate during Security Council debate on missile crisis. October 26, 1962.
Do you, Ambassador Zorin, deny that the USSR has placed and is placing medium and intermediate range missiles and sites in Cuba?
Robert Schumann, String Quartet in A Minor, Opus 41, Number 1 Movement. Recorded by T. Wilhoit. This tune was made from a public domain music score found at Project Gutenberg. Music site, http://gutenberg.net/music. The, quote, performance, unquote, is by my computer and is released into the public domain. If you fish around randomly in the Internet Archive, you're going to come up with random results. So the question becomes, what's a more reliable way to find interesting stuff to listen to? And the answer, as always on the Internet, is by way of someone else who's done the exploration and left a trail for you to follow. One of my favorite websites for doing that kind of exploration, and for tracking the explorations that other people are doing, is called WebJ.org. One of my favorite DJs, or WebJs, on WebJ.org is someone who calls herself Audio Katya. Here's an Argentinian tune that was released to the Internet Archive, and also to a net label called Comfort Stand Recordings. Katya pointed me to this one. It's by Flavia and the Motonets, and the name of the tune is Mariposa. Here's what Katya says about herself on her own website, audiooverplay.com. Audio Overplay is operated by one chick named Katya in central New York State, with a great deal of input from friends all over the world. This website is predominantly a catalog of neato websites that offer legal and free sharing of music. The primary purpose of this site is to connect artists and audiences. Artists who want the world to hear their music offer it online for free. This music is completely legal for a listener to download and enjoy. Audio also refers visitors to music archives, such as the United States Library of Congress, Opsound, Freenet Labels, and the Internet Archive. She adds that audio, which is spelled O-D-D-I-O, is a play on the word audio, but it is not meant to imply that the music is odd. It is just not likely to be heard on popular radio. Audio overplay exists to bring new sounds to your ears. Artists from overseas, artists from underground scenes, artists working from their home studios. The underdog is champion here. Too much great music remains in obscurity. I found Katya at webj.org, a site created by a guy named Lucas Gons, and dedicated to the proposition that what Napster got right fundamentally was the idea of collaborative discovery and sharing of music. What Napster got wrong, of course, was that most of what people wound up discovering and sharing was copyrighted music. But what if things were different? What if there were a significantly large space of alternatively licensed music floating around on the net? Music that was explicitly intended to be shared and to participate in the kind of collective discovery that thrives on the net. In October of 2004, Chris Anderson published an article in Wired magazine that got everyone thinking about the economic implications of this alternative space. The title of the article is The Long Tail. The subhead pretty much sums it up. Forget squeezing millions from a few mega hits at the top of the charts, it read. The future of entertainment is in the millions of niche markets at the shallow end of the bitstream. Anderson points out that a lot of the sales at Amazon.com, or at Netflix, or at Rhapsody, which is Real Network's streaming music service, a lot of those sales are happening out on the long tail. Items that appeal individually to small audiences, maybe even just a couple of people, but that collectively add up to big business. Of course, that's great for Apple's iTunes Music Store, or for Rhapsody. If they can aggregate the sales of lots and lots of bands like Flavia and the Motonettes, it'll be a nice business. But what does that mean individually to bands like Flavia and the Motonettes? Not much. Then again, it's not obvious that they care. I don't read Spanish very well, but at www.flaviamotonet.com.ar, there's no evidence of commercial ambition. It looks like these folks just enjoy making the music and enjoy the idea that some of us want to listen to it. Hey, it's a big world and there's room for lots of different approaches. Some artists will be happy just to make music they enjoy and to share it freely. Others will rely on net word of mouth to sell their recordings and promote their live performances. I think it's possible, even likely, that chart-topping commercial hits will emerge from the net labels, too. If that happens, though, it will create an interesting dilemma. How will people make a transition from a Creative Commons-style licensing regime to conventional copyright? And if they do, how can they avoid stalling the recommendation engine that's fueled by sharing and free distribution? Copyright calculus is wickedly complex, and as Larry Lessig points out, the law is not designed to help that engine run smoothly. Lessig is a Stanford law professor who's written several influential books at the intersection of technology, culture, commerce, and the law. He's also the guy who failed to convince the Supreme Court to strike down a 1998 act that had added 20 more years to the duration of U.S. copyrights. And, not coincidentally, he's been the driving force behind Creative Commons. At BloggerCon, a recent conference at Stanford put together by weblog visionary Dave Weiner, Lessig summarized the challenges.
There's an extraordinary range of amazingly creative stuff going on because of blogs and the technology of blogs. And it will get more interesting and amazing as podcasting develops and video blogs occur and a lot more content gets mixed together and spread through blogs. All of this extremely interesting stuff is problematic under existing intellectual property regulation. So in order to introduce this problem to those who aren't lawyers, to give you a sense of just how afraid you need to be, I want to just give you a picture of copyright law. So copyright law secures to the copyright owner a number of exclusive rights. Exclusive rights are the right to copy, derivative rights, distribution rights, performance rights, display rights, and digital performance rights in certain contexts. Okay? And the stuff that it applies to include literary works, musical works, dramatic works, choreographic works, pantomimes, motion pictures, sound recordings, and pictorial works and graphic works. Now, you can see two lists combined to produce a matrix. Here's the matrix. And I'm going to show you red wherever there is an exclusive right granted to one of these particular things, meaning wherever you need to get permission. There it is. When you produce one of these amazing blogs that links to pictures and to video and to sound as you send it out or as you podcast it, it's impossible to do right given this existing system. Creative Commons wraps a bunch of this content in modules that makes it easy to do right. And we could talk about other concepts along that line. But the point here is the law is not your friend right now. And one of the big questions is how we could make the law your friend, given that nobody in Washington is interested in talking about how to rationalize the law for creativity. They're interested in how to further make the law more extreme to shut down what they think of as piracy.
That clip, by the way, comes from itconversations.com, a website devoted to lectures, interviews, and discussions about technology and society. Over the last few months, I've listened to quite a lot of this stuff. When people see me around town on my daily run, they probably assume that it's music playing in my headphones, and often it is. But just as often, it's spoken word content. So anyway, back to the question about free versus commercial licensing. Is there any way these things can work together? John Buckman thinks so. He founded Magnatune.com last year in order to reinvent the idea of a record label in a way that acknowledges and harmonizes with the internet. Magnatune's motto is, "We are not evil." Its business plan is try before you buy. You can listen for free to any of its music, currently over 4,000 songs, organized as 326 albums by 174 artists, working in genres ranging from classical to jazz and blues to electronica. Here, for example, is a selection from a new Magnatune artist, blues rocker Barbara Leone.
Your voice is like thunder rolling in my ears. You change the atmosphere when you appear. Don't make a mess of all the plans we made. Come on, baby, don't rain on my parade.
MP3 versions of all of Magnatune's tracks are offered under a Creative Commons license so that it can be shared, played on internet radio, or even remixed on non-commercial terms. CD quality versions are available for purchase, and the purchase form looks different from most you've seen. In this case, it reads, "Buy a downloadable album of Human Needs by Barbara Leone," and then it asks, "How much do you want to pay?" The drop-down list defaults to the recommended choice, $8. But the range of choices goes from $5 to $18, with a notation that says, 50% goes directly to the artist, so please be generous. But there's another option, too. You can buy a commercial license that entitles you to do a variety of things. Suppose you're making an independent film and you'd like to use the tune we just heard in the opening credits. For a film with a budget under $250,000, intended to play at festivals and art houses, the license works out to $66, that is, $33 to Magnatune, and $33 to Barbara Leone. For a film with an unlimited budget and worldwide distribution, it comes to about $7,500, split between the artist and the label. Could this actually work? Who knows? Everybody's just making this stuff up on the fly. I met John Buckman in March at the South by Southwest conference and told him about WebJ. 6 months later, John's weblog pointed me to the following press release. Internet record label Magnatune has partnered with community playlist site WebJ to feature Magnatune music at WebJ's site. Since people come to WebJ to find new music, and Magnatune has the largest and widest selection of high-quality music on the internet, it makes sense to feature that music at WebJ so that my users have an easier time finding great music to add to their playlists, says WebJ founder Lucas Gons. Both our sites share a vision of promoting legal listening to entire songs as the best way to encourage people to buy music, Gons added. With the major labels cutting their marketing and promotional budgets to the bone, people are starting to discover music on their own rather than having it force-fed to them, says Magnatune founder and CEO John Buckman. The teenager experience of playing music for your friends is now being replicated on a worldwide scale, with sites such as WebJ and Magnatune opening the door to new stars being born through grassroots support rather than command and control style marketing. I'd like to think these guys are right, but whether or not new stars are born, I'm pretty sure that open source music is here to stay, for the same reason that open source software is here to stay. In both cases, you've got one group of people who just plain like to make the stuff, and another group who like to use the stuff. With each passing day, the net becomes a more nearly frictionless environment in which all these folks can connect with one another. Businesses will certainly be built on top of this free exchange of ideas and expressions, but open source audio, like open source software, is going to thrive whether or not those businesses exist.